All right, good morning.
Good morning.
We are going to continue on with lesson 12 of our study on how God is wise and makes great plans. And today we're going to look at a pretty good example of what not to do. We'll look at how King Jeroboam changes God's plan. And we'll see the problems that causes. We'll see the changes that he makes and why that is inappropriate, why it was wrong, and look at kind of a comparison between what should have been done and what was actually done. Of course, before we get into that, again, just want to quickly run through our timeline. Before the world began, God made a great plan, even before time as we know it. So God is from everlasting to everlasting and has an everlasting plan. Then we get into basically the book of Genesis, the first fathers, and then the period of Moses leading the people out of Egypt and through the wilderness and to the promised land, and that's Exodus through Deuteronomy. And then the books of Joshua and Judges, it's the period of taking the land and being established kind of as an independent nation with their own land, with their own laws. And then the period of the kings, the people weren't happy with the judges. They weren't happy with the way things were going at the time. They wanted to be like everyone else, so they demanded a king, which we talked about how that's not what God's plan was, but he allowed them to have that. And we've looked at some of those, and that's the period of time we're in right now. And that's really, a lot of the Old Testament kind of stories that we maybe don't look at quite as often. A lot of the kings, we know a few of the famous ones. We talk about Saul and David and Solomon a lot. But then once you get past them, it's probably a little bit lesser known, some of the stories of the kings. But we'll look at one of those, not super lesser known, but a little bit more minor characters as we see them. But because they're disobedient, the people are punished and are taken out of the land. They lose their spot in what was the promised land, and they're taken captive in foreign nations. But as God had promised, the remnant returned, and so that's basically how the Old Testament ends, is that a group of them have come back to the land. They've rebuilt the city and the wall, the Jerusalem, rebuilt the temple. And so that's the conclusion, basically, of the Old Testament, and that sets up God or Christ coming, and Christ is the climax or the epitome of God's great plan, and that leads into us, leads the way for how we now are a part of God's plan, and we can build our lives as part of that plan. And so we talked about, the wise man builds his house, on God's word, and the foolish man doesn't, is pretty simple. Some of those things we've looked at, we looked at how Noah followed the building plan, building the ark, how Abraham was willing to follow God's plan, even when it was very difficult, in sacrificing his son, didn't have to carry that out, but was prepared to. Moses, we looked at during his time period, the people complained, they weren't happy with God's plan. But when they were bit by the fiery serpents, if they turned to look to what God had set up for them, looked back to God, and that bronze serpent, they would be healed. We looked at how Balaam wanted to follow Balak's plan more than God's plan. Then we got into Joshua and the period of taking the land, and we looked at how they followed God's battle plan in defeating Jericho, but how Achan loved money more than God's plan. And so he stole some from Jericho, what was supposed to be dedicated to God. And so the punishment that came from that. And that led us into the period of the kings. And so far in the kings, we've looked at the people wanting a king more than they wanted God's plan. God was supposed to be their king, but they wanted to be like everyone else. So we looked at the problems that would cause and how the first king, King Saul, did some of what God said, but not all. And again, the problems that arose from that. And we looked then last week about how David wasn't following God's plan, or he didn't study God's plan and move the ark the correct way. And so because of that, Uzzah broke God's plan or broke God's law and was punished for it. So we are now in 1 Kings, and we'll be looking mostly in chapter 12, a little before and a little after that. But we're going to look at how foolish people, and Jeroboam is the foolish person here, tries to change God's plan. And we'll look at several things that he changes in how he wants the people to worship. And so we're going to look mainly at Jeroboam and a little bit at Rehoboam in this situation. But just briefly, I like to go over how we got where we are from where we were. Last time we talked about we were in David's kingdom. David was the king, really in God's kingdom, of course. And so God makes a promise to David that his kingdom is going to endure. The promise to David in some ways is similar to the promises to Abraham, in that they not only had a shorter long-term fulfillment with his immediate descendants, but also the promise goes all the way through Jesus. But we see David doesn't always do things the right way. We see he commits adultery with Bathsheba. And that's really the start of things spiraling out of control in David's kingdom. His life after that's not very easy. His family's torn apart. He fights with his son. His family has problems. But David holds fast to God. He's considered a man after God's own heart. And we'll see every time there's a comparison looking back of something positive, that comparison is David. If you followed in the way of David, you were doing things the right way. So David's son Solomon, not his oldest son, but his second son with Bathsheba, is eventually anointed king, becomes the king, and he builds the temple. Of course, Solomon's temple is often referred to that was very famous and was a crucial part of where they worshipped. So Solomon has the temple built, but at the end of Solomon's life, when Solomon is old, in chapter 11 of 1 Kings, we see that he turns away from God. He has 1,000 wives and concubines, foreigners, and they pull his heart to different gods. And so God punishes him and says, I'm going to tear basically the kingdom away from you. So eventually, when he dies, Rehoboam is given part of the kingdom, but due to some of his foolishness and also to what Solomon did, the kingdom is split. And so Rehoboam maintains basically the Judah area. He's got Judah and Benjamin, and the northern kingdom is given to Jeroboam. And so now we're in the period often called the divided kingdom, where you've got typically referred to as Judah and Israel. So from here on, Israel typically is going to refer to what had been Israel outside of Judah, kind of that group that is broken apart. And so our timeline here, again, we had David's reign began about 1010 B.C. He reigned 40 years. Solomon reigned 40 years. So Rehoboam takes the kingdom in about 930 B.C. And again, this is right pretty much immediately. Jeroboam is given part of the kingdom. So that is how we got from David to Rehoboam and Jeroboam. We'll look at just a couple passages up here in Deuteronomy. You shall not add to the word which I command you, nor take from it, that you may keep the commandments of the Lord your God, which I command you. And then we've got some of his commandments here. And this is actually back in Exodus. And God spoke all these words, saying, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make yourself a carved image, any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is on earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them nor serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing mercy to thousands, to those who love me and keep my commandments. So, again, this is established in God's law. from back in the time of Moses, from a while back. So now we'll get into today's study in 1 Kings. And I actually want to look a little bit, again, to set the stage in 1 Kings 11. We'll look at the promise to Jeroboam that he's going to be given the kingdom. So I'm going to start reading in verse 29 of 1 Kings chapter 11. It says, "It came about at that time when Jeroboam went out of Jerusalem that the prophet Ahijah the Shilonite found him on the road. Now Ahijah had clothed himself with a new cloak, and both of them were alone in the field. And Ahijah took hold of the new cloak which was on him and tore it into 12 pieces. He said to Jeroboam, 'Take for yourself 10 pieces, for thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, behold, I will tear the kingdom out of the hand of Solomon and give you 10 tribes. But he will have one tribe for the sake of my servant David and for the sake of Jerusalem, the city which I have chosen from all the tribes of Israel. Because they have forsaken me and have worshipped Ashtaroth, the goddess of the Sidonians, Chemosh, the god of Moab, and Milcom, the god of the sons of Ammon, and they have not walked in my ways, doing what is right in my sight and observing my statutes and my ordinances, as his father David did, nevertheless, I will not take the whole kingdom out of his hand, but I will make him ruler all the days of his life. For the sake of my servant David, whom I chose, who observed my commandments and my statutes, but I will take the kingdom from his son's hands and give it to you, even 10 tribes. But to his sons I will give one tribe, that my servant David may have a lamp always before me in Jerusalem, that city where I have chosen for myself to put my name." So he tells Jeroboam he's going to give him a lot of the kingdom. He's going to get basically 10/12 of the kingdom. But he's going to leave a little bit. He's going to leave Jerusalem and that area to David's descendants. Why was he taking the rest of the kingdom away from David's descendants? All right, and what specifically had they done wrong? All right, yeah, they'd followed false gods, and it lists three of them here. And I don't know a whole lot about those, but clearly any god that wasn't Jehovah was a false god. He talked about he's a jealous God, is what we looked at in Exodus 20. And so that's basically the worst thing you could do is essentially that's committing adultery with another God is how he looks at that, is how that's kind of described. So because of the false gods that Solomon and the people had gone after, the kingdom is torn, at least mostly, from his descendants. Let's just read a little bit more here. Verse 37, "I will take you, and you shall reign over whatever you desire, and you shall be king over Israel. Then it will be that if you listen to all that I command you and walk in my ways and do what is right in my sight by observing my statutes and my commandments, as my servant David did, then I will be with you and build you an enduring house as I built for David, and I will give Israel to you. Thus I will afflict the descendants of David for this, but not always." So we see here again, What does the Lord say to Jeroboam?
As long as he keeps his commands, he'll bless him and he'll have a dynasty.
All right. Is that basically the same promise he gave to David? I mean, pretty similar. I mean, we could be looking back and see Jeroboam similar to the way we see David. Obviously, it wouldn't be exactly the same due to the line of Christ, but he could be in that category. We're going to see that that's not the way it goes for him. We're going to skip a little bit quickly through what happens with Rehoboam. But essentially, Rehoboam takes over the kingdom. And this is, again, before it's actually been broken out. Obviously, the promise is there. But he's got the kingdom, and he's trying to decide how to govern. And he's, of course, a younger ruler. And so there's the option of Solomon had put maybe heavy burdens on them. There were hard work. There were he had made things challenging for his people, which again is what God said was going to happen if they wanted a king. But Rehoboam has the opportunity to decide how he's going to either change that or build on that. And his options are given to him by the old wise men who counselors for his father Solomon. Solomon, considered a pretty wise man, like basically the wisest man of all time. So his counselors Probably he picked good ones, I would assume. That's what the wise man would do. So they give him what advice? Anyone remember?
Lighten the load.
Make it easier on them, and they'll stay with you. All right, so who else does Rehoboam go to? All right, he goes to his peers, his contemporaries. What do they tell him to do? All right, make it heavy. So what does the wise Rehoboam do? All right, so he does not make a wise decision. He doesn't go with the advice of the wise, older counselors, but he goes with his peers. You know, we look at that and we see the results and we can see that that's foolish. But we also probably aren't surprised. If we, you know, think of young people and just think of, maybe, I don't know exactly how old he was, but, you know, think of people who are in their late teens, who are maybe going out on their own. And do they have, you know, that respect for those who've been there before? A lot of times, not as much. A lot of times, they think they know and their group knows so much more because, you know, it's so much different than it was, you know, 30 years ago or 50 years ago back when Solomon was reigning. It was these people, they're out of touch with the times. So we're not surprised by that. But he acts foolishly, and it does show that God may have had a part in this. Verse 15 of chapter 12 says, "So the king did not listen to the people, for it was a turn of events from the Lord that he might establish his word, which the Lord spoke through Ahijah, the Shilonite, to Jeroboam, the son of Nebat." So God may have played some part in that. Again, it's always, at least to me, it's a little challenging to know how much is just like with Pharaoh, how much was Pharaoh hardened his heart and God used that, and how much of a part God played in that. But this made what God had promised or what was prophesied, made it come about. So Rehoboam has most of the kingdom taken from him and it's given to Jeroboam. So we'll be in basically 25 through 33 of 1 Kings 12 for about the rest of the class. And that's going to be our main points here. So verse 25, "Then Jeroboam built Shechem in the hill country of Ephraim and lived there. And he went out from there and built Penuel. Jeroboam said in his heart, 'Now the kingdom will return to the house of David. If the people go up to offer sacrifices in the house of the Lord at Jerusalem, then the heart of the people will return to their Lord, even to Rehoboam, king of Judah, and they will kill me and return to Rehoboam, king of Judah.'" All right, so he is put in charge, and what's the first thing we see that he thinks? I'm about to lose my kingdom and be killed. All right. And I would say, you know, that's probably not uncommon for a king to think. Throughout history, that's always been a spot that people would kill for. People would take an opportunity to kill the king if they could put themselves in that position. It seems like how kingdoms have worked throughout history. So, again, we can see in some ways why this was his thought. But what promise had God just made to him? All right, you'll be established. You don't have to worry if you follow my commandments, essentially. So is Jeroboam off to a good start here? No. And so we're going to see what he does about it, and it just keeps getting worse. All right, so verse 28. "So the king consulted." Doesn't say who he consulted, but it's pretty clear who he doesn't consult. God. "So the king consulted and made two golden calves, and he said to them, 'It is too much for you to go up to Jerusalem. Behold your gods, O Israel, that brought you up from the land of Egypt.' And he set one in Bethel, and the other he put in Dan. Now this thing became a sin, for the people went to worship before the one as far as Dan. And he made houses of high places and made priests from among all the people who were not of the sons of Levi." Stop there. We'll pick up in just a second. But he decides what he's going to do. And so he's worried that if the people go back to Jerusalem, they'll go back to Rehoboam and they'll kill him. So what's he decide to do? All right. Again, I think from a physical standpoint, we can kind of see his logic, at least the first part of his logic. But obviously, he either doesn't know anything about the history of his people, or he just doesn't care. So what's he decide to make? All right, and what specifically are these gods that he makes? Yeah, golden calves. All right, is this the first time we've seen golden calves? No, when have we seen this before? All right, this is basically the first thing that Israel as a people did. Even as they're getting their law, or before they could get their law, this is what Aaron, the people wanted, and what Aaron put together for them was a golden calf. So again, he's following not a great example here. We saw the problem that caused. So I'm going to make these two calves, and where does he decide to put them? In Bethel and Dan. So, why did he choose these places? I've got a pretty accurate picture up here. And so you'll see Judah would have been down in this area. So this is the area that Rehoboam would have still had that belonged to David's house. And then the rest, this northern part, Israel, is where Jeroboam's people were. So, he didn't want the people to go to Jerusalem, right here where the temple is. So where does he put the altar, one of the altars?
Just
before you get there. So so anyone going that direction, basically there's no way that you would be closer to worshiping in Jerusalem than here. And then where does he put the other one? Yeah, at the very top. So essentially, you're not going to be closer to a place to worship in another land than you are in his. So, I mean, did he make it much more convenient for the people in the southern half? Well, for the people in the northern half, I think it's much more convenient to get to Dan than Jerusalem. But it's not really, I wouldn't think someone in Shechem is going to have a much harder time getting to Jerusalem than to Bethel. So at least in that sense, it wasn't that he was really making it more convenient for the people. He's making it to where they're not going to leave his land. So again, while we won't see anything right in this, it's not even done from a way to hopefully help other people. But I think we see it's completely selfish on keeping people within his land. Yeah, I mean, it would be a little bit easier. But it's not, it's not that he put it really right in the center where everyone can get closer to it. I think the key is you're not leaving my land to go to an easier place. It's not going to be more convenient for you to get out of my land than to stay in it. I think we see some of that in it. But yeah, I mean, it definitely, even 10 miles if you're walking, is a big deal. Right. Yeah, you're not walking from Maine to Florida.
Here is the thing that I see by looking at that. The Lord had a place for him to worship. And even if he made a shorter distance, it was not so far that they couldn't get to Jerusalem.
Yeah, that's exactly right. God didn't expect them to do something that they couldn't do. I think that's a very good point right there. We'll continue on and just read. Let's see what I have up here. I'm trying to keep up with my slides. I'm not great at it, but so we'll read the last two verses of this chapter. Jeroboam instituted a feast in the eighth month on the 15th day of the month, like the feast which is in Judah, and he went up to the altar. Thus he did in Bethel, sacrificing to the calves which he had made. And he stationed in Bethel the priests of the high places which he had made. Then he went up to the altar which he had made in Bethel on the 15th day of the eighth month, even in the month which he had devised in his own heart, and he instituted a feast for the sons of Israel and went up to the altar to burn incense. So, I want to look at everything that he instituted here and see how it compares with God's plan. And so this is my question. Is it right or is it wrong? Was it correct that there was supposed to be a place that they went to worship?
There was already a place.
Yes. Yes, there was a place they're supposed to go worship. Did he send them to worship in that correct place? No. All right. Where were they supposed to worship? All right. Where did he set up to worship? All right. So he took something that needed to be there and he changed it. He said, you know, you need a place to worship, but he didn't give them the right one. What about sacrifices? Where are they supposed to offer sacrifices? Huh? Well, or at the temple. Yeah. Were they supposed to offer them? Yes. Yeah. Who were they supposed to sacrifice to? God. All right. Who did they sacrifice to? Golden calves. All right. Again, you know, I think the Bible does a pretty good job to show how foolish idolatry is. You know, these things that you're making with your own hands, you're now, you know, sacrificing to or worshiping to. So, again, what they were supposed to do, sacrifice, he left in place, but he changed it. He changed who they're sacrificing to. You know, what about priests? Were they required to have priests throughout to have the correct worship? Yeah, who were supposed to be the priests? Levites. All right, what priest did he set up?
Anybody could be a priest.
Yeah, whoever. You don't have to be a Levite. You'd be whatever. You want to be a priest, sure, go for it. I mean, essentially is what it seems like. He's, oh, I know. Yeah, go on, take this position. I don't care if you're qualified. So what about feast days? Were there proper feast days?
Yes.
Anybody remember what proper feast days were? Yeah, it depends on the month. I think what is referred to here, it talks about, he says in verse 32, like the feast which is in Judah. I think he's probably referring to the Feast of Booths. Not as it sounded like Mr. Peeler would always say in class, the Feast of Booze, but the Feast of Booths. When was it supposed to be? Anyone remember? All right. What day? Yeah, the 15th day of the 7th month. So when does Jeroboam decide that they're going to have a feast day? Yeah, the 15th day of the 8th month. That's pretty close, right? I mean, might as well just put a little slant on it. We'll just change it up a little bit, add some spice to it. Where did he come up with the 15th day of the 8th month? What's it say in verse 33? All right. Devised in his own heart. We see, and I think that's probably the source of everything. He devised it in his own heart. He took something that he saw worked, he saw was right, was the plan from God to go to Jerusalem, to offer sacrifices to God. There were priests doing that. There were specific days that they came to have feasts. He sees that works, and he says, well, we need to do those same things. But we'll change it just a little bit to do what I come up with in my own heart. Yeah, Doug?
Leviticus 23:34 says, speaking to the children of Israel, saying the 15th day of this 7th month shall be the Feast of Tabernacle for 7 days.
Yep. Yeah, there are some other feasts as well that it could be referring to, but none of them were on the 8th month, the 15th day. And I think that's probably the right one, Doug. So we see that he does his own thing, you know, kind of the Frank Sinatra song, I Did It My Way. That's what he went with. So now let's just look back. Why was he given the kingdom? Or why was it taken from Solomon's people?
Because of David.
Well, why was he given it from Solomon's people? Like, why did Rehoboam and Solomon lose this part of it?
He made that he was going to serve the people with scorpions instead of whips.
Yeah, so that's kind of what triggered them to rebel against him. But even before that, why did God say he was taking it away from Solomon's people we talked about earlier? Yeah, they didn't follow him and they worshipped idols. So what's Jeroboam setting up for the people? Worshipping idols. You know, the exact reason he's given the kingdom is because someone else made this foolish decision. And what's, you know, essentially the first thing he does is, I want to keep the people, so I'm going to do the exact same thing that lost the kingdom for these other people. Again, do we see the foolishness there?
Well, Jeroboam was one that came to Rehoboam and said, if you'll make her yoke easier to bear, we'll follow him.
Yeah.
So in his mind, and thinking like a man with flesh mind,
mm-hmm.
he said he wanted to keep those people, keep them connected to him. So, you know, if you look at it, there's a thread that follows flesh through. And then God's plan is set above all that. Yeah. And that's where you should be, on the high ground, not the low ground.
Yep. That's exactly right. You know, there's two possible paths he could take. There's the way that seems right to a man, essentially. And that's what he went with. He saw what in his heart was the best way to keep his kingdom, but it didn't match up with what God had specifically said and what God had done. So he either, and he knew, at least in this, with Solomon, he knew why God had taken it. Like, it is specifically told to him that because they went after these false gods, I've taken it away and I'm giving it to you. So he knew that from God. But who did he put his trust in?
Man.
Yeah, he put his trust in himself and in the idols. But I think ultimately in his own heart or in his own mind, he put his trust in himself. And he said, you know, my way is better than God's way. And we'll see the results of that. We won't spend much time on this. We're about out of time. But we will read in chapter 13. Now behold, there came a man of God from Judah to Bethel by the word of the Lord, while Jeroboam was standing by the altar to burn incense. He cried against the altar by the word of the Lord and said, O altar, altar, thus says the Lord, behold, a son shall be born to the house of David, Josiah by name, and on you he shall sacrifice the priests of the high places who burn incense on you, and human bones shall be burned on you. Then he gave the sign the same day, saying, this is the sign which the Lord has spoken. Behold, the altar shall be split apart, and the ashes which are on it shall be poured out. So, prophecy against Jeroboam. So Jeroboam hears this. It says, when the king heard the saying of the man of God, he cried out against the altar. When he cried out against the altar in Bethel, Jeroboam stretched out his hand from the altar, saying, seize him. Yeah, his first thought is, this man is speaking against me. He's speaking the words of God, but it's against me. Seize him. Get rid of him. But what happens to his hand, Donnie?
He shrivels up.
All right. It shrivels up. It seizes up. His hand, it dried out. So the altar was split apart and the ashes were poured out from the altar according to the sign which the man of God had given. And so now what does the king say?
He wants you to intercede.
Can you fix this for me? I can't do this myself. You know, I think, again, put in his place in some ways to show that you don't have the power over this. You don't even have the power over your own hand. So pray for me to the Lord that my hand may be restored. So the man does so. The king tells him, come, be refreshed, come with me. Well, what does the man say?
No,
I'm not allowed to. I've been told, you know, don't stay, don't eat bread, don't drink water, don't even return the same way. So he doesn't. So that's where we're going to kind of close out today. That is going to set the stage for what we see next week, which is this couple prophets having a little change in plan, and we'll see whose plan is followed. So the title is The Young Prophet to King Jeroboam Believes Someone Else's Plan Instead of God's Plan. And so it's all good up till verse 10, and then it's going to start going downhill. So that's going to be basically the rest of 1 Kings 13 is what we'll look at next week. So we've got, I guess, a minute or two left if anyone has any questions or thoughts or comments. Yes.
People, just a few, of course, later Elijah and Elisha.
people in the northern tribes, but not many. And that's why they go into apostasy pretty fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one thing you'll see if you study through, if you're just putting a good or a bad check mark by the kings, in Judah, you've got a lot of bad kings with a couple good kings sprinkled in. But in Israel following Jeroboam, it's hard to find a single king that you'd put that good check mark by. The Israel, the northern kingdom, goes downhill quick. It never really recovers from the sins of Jeroboam. And it's going to, in the same way that there's a call back to following the ways of David, on the other side of that, these wicked kings basically followed in the footsteps of Jeroboam. So he's could have had his kingdom established similar to David, but instead he set up this basically a trend going in exactly the opposite direction. All right, I guess that closes out our time. So thank you all. And I think my last week will be next week covering this foolish old prophet and young prophet. So thank you all.